Barbara Harvey, welcome to KABU.
Thank you, Bill. I'm very glad to join you and to talk to you.
Barbara Harvey works as a lawyer in Detroit. One of her specialties is the BDS movement, that's Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions, directed at Israel for Palestinian human rights. Barbara, why don't you introduce yourself and talk about your role in both labor struggles and in the U.S. labor struggles and in BDS?
Thanks, Bill. Well, I started out as a civil rights lawyer and then discovered the union reform movement and was absolutely captivated by the courage and vision and dedication of the activists in it, and dedicated about 30 years of my career to working with the union reform movement, most particularly the Teamster reform movement, the Teamsters for Democratic Union, and other groups trying to make the labor movement stronger by making it more responsive to its membership. And then more and more in recent years, I've become very active in the Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions movement as an activist and then eventually as a lawyer again, because as the movement has become bigger in the United States, it has come under attack. And we, as lawyers, realized that activists really needed some legal assistance. And a group of us formed what amounts to a virtual pro bono, that is free of charge, law collective that is dedicated to providing legal support for the activists who support Palestinian human rights, equal rights, justice. And that's what BDS is all about.
Mm-hmm. Just one brief question. Were you one of the lawyers who won that case of harassment against a very militant Zionist organization that sued a bunch of students, and you sued them back for harassment? And did you participate in that case?
I think you're talking about the Felber case in at the University of California at Berkeley.
Right.
I was not a lawyer. I was in the group that led to the formation of the legal team. And I was on the legal team that won the Olympia Food Co-op case.
Let's talk about all of those in a few minutes. Those are interesting stories. First, though, let's talk about the BDS movement itself and what it is and who it's directed at. Ultimately, Israel, but it's directed at a variety of companies that are supporting the IDF, the Israeli, quote, defense forces in occupying the West Bank. Tell us the scope of the BDS movement and who it's directed at.
BDS, Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions, is essentially conceptually a nonviolent vehicle for resistance to the Israeli occupation of Palestine. And by nonviolent resistance, we're talking about economic and educational organizing. There was a call that went out in 2005 for BDS activism globally by Palestine civil society. 170-plus civil society organizations in Palestine joined together issuing this call, and the movement has three goals. The goals are, number one, to end the occupation, which means leaving all of the occupied areas, including the settlements, which by this time dominate business and movements within Palestine. Number two, it means equal rights for the Palestinian citizens of Israel. And number three, it means recognition of the Palestinian right to return to homes that Palestinians fled for fear of their lives, which is a right that exists under international law. And it was an inspiration to the rest of the world in large part because it united Palestinian civil society. This was virtually all of Palestinian civil society that united in support of the call for nonviolent economic resistance to the occupation. And it began first in Europe, and it has now come to the United States, and it has transformed the debate and the facts on the ground in an amazingly short period of time. It takes shape in various ways. There are some boycotts that are boycotts against Israel, And the Olympia Food Co-op boycott was such a boycott. The Olympia Food Co-op, which is huge, actually, has 22,000 members, first business in the United States to implement a boycott against Israel. But BDS also takes the form of boycott or divestment from businesses everywhere in the world, not just in Israel, but in the United States and elsewhere, that profit from or support the occupation in any kind of significant or direct way.
Like Caterpillar, for example.
Like Caterpillar. And Caterpillar is like the poster child for the BDS movement, in a sense, because it is the company that sends those militarized D9 bulldozers under military contracts between the United States and Israel to be weaponized and armor-plated and then sent to bulldoze Palestinian civilian homes, to build up berms on Palestinian roads so that they can't be used, and to tear up olive trees. And it was a D9 bulldozer that killed Rachel Corrie, the student from Evergreen College who was standing in front of a home in Gaza in 2003, and she was bulldozed to her death. So Caterpillar is the poster child. Veolia is a French company, which very few Americans know of, but it is a huge presence in this country as well as elsewhere in the world. It is the largest water treatment processor in the United States, and it also runs small transportation systems, including all of the shuttle services around the airports in the United States, and also including, and here's where its role in the occupation is particularly offensive, bus service and light rail service on segregated roads in segregated buses and rail cars that connect the Israeli settlements to Jerusalem and Israel. All of this is illegal activity under international law.
They also were running the garbage service, weren't they?
And they have a landfill. They run a landfill, literally turning a piece of Palestine into a garbage dump for Israeli garbage.
Oh, it's Israeli garbage as well as the settlement garbage that's going into this huge landfill on Palestinian land.
That's right.
They're now withdrawing, aren't they? Caterpillar has been losing investors.
But Veolia is very interesting for the reason you're citing, Bill, because Veolia has actually lost about $20 billion in lost contracts or canceled contracts in Europe. Which, you know, while we can't point with scientific precision and say, aha, Veolia has admitted that it lost this contract because of the boycott, divestment, and sanctions activism, in fact, the losses have followed such activism, hot on the heels of such activism. And this is a huge amount of money, which interestingly corresponds almost exactly in its amount to the debt that Veolia has racked up, which has caused its credit rating to be downgraded. And so it is not an attractive investment anymore, and it's trying to sell off some of the more controversial of its businesses, including some of its transportation work with Israel. And the interesting fact here is that it was basically unable to find a buyer for its role in the operation of the light rail system that connects the settlements with Jerusalem, and had to sell its interest eventually to Eged, which is the Israeli bus system. And Eged insisted as a condition of the sale that Veolia stay around long enough to teach Eged how to run a railroad. So that continues to be its engagement. It also continues to run buses on some of the segregated roads that people from South Africa who fought for equal rights in South Africa, when they went and visited Palestine, were shocked to see, because they tell us there were never any such things in South Africa at its worst. There were not segregated roads. People were allowed to travel. People were allowed to get on buses.
This is KBOO Radio, 90.7 FM, Portland, Oregon. Bill Resnick for The Old Mole, talking to Barbara Harvey, who's both a labor lawyer and pro bono, works with the BDS movement as a lawyer and activist in the United States. She's written on the BDS movement. Barbara Harvey, we've just talked about particularly the European examples where the BDS movement is quite successful and is forcing firms that are enabling and working to support Israeli settlements, and the taking of Palestinian land is putting great pressure on them to withdraw from that. Talk about the U.S. What's happening here?
Things are finally beginning to happen here, which is a true breakthrough, because in the U.S., much more than in Europe, there has been voluntary self-censorship by the media, the mainstream media here, for decades about what really happens in Israel and Palestine in the treatment of Palestinians, which you didn't find in Europe. And so Europeans knew what was happening, and therefore they became active years before we did. But it has come to our shores now, and particularly on campuses, which is where the movement needs to be, in fact. And at this point, there are, as of last year, there were more than 100 different campuses on which there were chapters of Students for Justice in Palestine, which is amazing in such a short period of time to have that kind of development. And there have been divestment resolutions adopted by Hampshire College first, and then last year a fabulous resolution at Oberlin College, which was adopted overwhelmingly. And then at UC campuses, at least three UC campuses, including Irvine and Berkeley and Davis, adopted divestment resolutions. And each of these resolutions was adopted despite absolutely fierce opposition, fierce, well-organized, and very well-financed. And the response has been by the conservative Zionist organizations in this country to amass a war chest of $6 million dedicated solely to the destruction of the BDS movement in the United States.
This is KBOO Radio, 90.7 FM. Bill Resnick here for the Old Mole Variety Hour, talking to Barbara Harvey, who's a lawyer for groups seeking to democratize unions, like Teamsters for a Democratic Union. She's also part of a legal group that provides pro bono services to campus chapters of the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement, and making an effort to force the Israelis to grant human rights to Palestinians. Barbara Harvey, tell us about the importance of the BDS movement.
Why it's so important for us to pursue BDS, and why it's so important for us to pay heed to what's happening in Israel and what Israel is doing. There is a criticism often leveled against BDS activism. Why Israel, which is the only democracy in the Middle East, why not other countries such as Sudan, which is engaging in really egregious violations of human rights also? And there are important answers to that question. Israel's position, and the reason, one of the main reasons it says that BDS is anti-Semitic, is that in its view, Israel has a right to exist as a Jewish state and to do whatever is necessary to maintain its identity as a Jewish state. So that means that while it may continue to function as a democracy for its Jewish citizens, it reserves the, quote, right to refuse to grant a democracy to its non-Jewish citizens, and to refuse to grant voting rights if it comes down to that, in order to preserve the character of the state as a Jewish state. I think we all have a personal interest, as well as just a reason to help the people who are being victimized by that attitude, the Palestinians, to actively oppose that and to fight for equal rights instead of that. Because if democracy is defined as a place in which it is okay for a dominant group to purge the minority group in order to preserve its majority status, that is a very dangerous precedent for the entire world and for the United States as a democracy.
Yeah, it leads to ethnic cleansing.
It has led to ethnic cleansing. In fact, Israel is on the brink of expelling 40,000 of its citizens who have been living for centuries in the Negev desert, because they are Bedouins, and they want to put, Israel wants to put other people, make other uses of that area of the Negev, and it reserves the right to displace even its own citizens from their lands when it suits state purposes to do so. This is not a precedent that we want to see take root in the world. We want a world in which minority populations have the same rights as the majority population of a country. It's a basic and extraordinarily important principle of a civilized society to maintain equal rights for every citizen.
And if not, in fact, majorities will, as in India, as in the Sudan, as in the old Yugoslavia, majorities will be again insisting on privilege for their group. And when the subordinated group begins to protest, they then ethnically cleanse, kill, bring law cases in prison, and ultimately find civil war in those countries, usually brutal and murderous for the subordinate. It's a recipe, it seems to me, just for continuous internecine warfare, as, let's say, in Ireland for the past 100 years.
Right. It is a recipe for that kind of violent interaction between groups, perceiving groups as adversarial always instead of capable of living in harmony and peace with one another. And it also has other really insidiously destructive effects within the group that is the majority group, which are more subtle. And that is that in order to bring your youngsters fresh from college into a state of mind in which they're willing to point a gun at a child on his or her way to school, or clap that child into handcuffs and throw the child into a paddy wagon, the minority group needs to be dehumanized, because behaving in that manner is repulsive to people. And you have to dehumanize the minority group in order to bring your population to engage in such conduct, to oppress and suppress a population, and to treat them with violence. And that means teaching people to dehumanize. And when you dehumanize one group, you don't stop at that group. You dehumanize people within your own group who you're angry with, who you are fighting with, who, for whatever reason, you're not getting along with. It's a very insidiously anti-civilizing force.
Barbara Harvey, I think we're going to have to end. There's a number of subjects we wanted to cover but are not going to be able to in this interview. We'll do something like this again. We have to talk about the way in which a settlement, even if it's possible to get a settlement, either a one-state or two-state solution with Palestinian human rights, that won't be the end of the story. As in South Africa, forms of economic privilege would likely remain, and that economic privilege solidifies, and those who run the economy have an outside, a huge influence on how the state is run and who runs it, and the subordinate group, again, is going to find themselves sometimes with voting privileges, but really unable to shape their lives, like the underclass in the United States, or in fact, it's not just the underclass, it's the bottom 70% of people are really excluded from meaningful participation in decision-making process, except in personal life. Barbara, we can't talk about that, but the BDS movement will have to transform itself a little bit into a human rights movement if it,
it
in
is
the event.
A human
yeah,
rights movement.
And it will continue even with these many of its achievements, of the short-term achievements. Thanks a lot for talking to us today, Barbara.
It's been my pleasure, Bill. Thank you.
Right. So long.
Bye-bye.